Okay, guys, we're going to start. Now, time to leave. So I know that some of the sources were a little long today, but I think it was quite an interesting topic to discuss. Gets back to our ubiquitous Araita conversation about rabbinic authority. One of the marks that we're a serious yeshiva, we're one of the few yeshiva in the world which discusses rabbinic authority more than Shomer Negiah. It's a good sign. Good sign for yeshiva. Okay, so let's see what we have here regarding rabbinic authority. So it's often a good idea when you're learning a halakhic topic to start with the psukim. Okay, Tanakh. Okay, to start with the psukim. Often how the psukim are situated, what the phraseology is could be telling. So I'd often recommend not to start with Mishnah Gemara, but to start with the pasuk. So we are going to start with the psukim. So if you go to Sefer Dvarim and take a look at psukim, let's look at what the context is when we first hear about rabbinic authority. This is Dvarim Yudzayin. What's the context? So we have Yudzayin, Perek Yudzayin, Pasuk Chet. Here we go. Okay, Ki Plei Mechad Davar L'Mishpat Ben Dam Udam Edim Edim Nega L'Nega Dibay Rav Bishrecha. Okay, what kind of question do you have? You have a halachic question. V'kamta V'alito Makom Mishir V'chashim Kech L'Bo. So you go to the Beit HaMikdash, where that's where the judges are. U'bat El HaKohanim Al-Aviyam V'al-Shofei Shibim Edim. And you ask them for the answer. And here's the psukim that grant weight to the rabbinic authority. Asita al-piya davai shi'agidu l'cha min ha-makom ha-hu shi'vachai Hashem. Do what he tells you. Al-piya t'rei yirucha, etc. Lo tasur min ha-davai shi'agidu l'cha yiminu smol. So you have both a positive formulation, asita al-piya davar, and a negative formulation, lo tasur min ha-davai shi'agidu l'cha. Right? Don't depart from what he tells you to the right or to the left. Great. So we've got psukim for rabbinic authority. But what was the context there again? Why did someone have to go to a rabbi?
If you've got a problem.
You got a problem. Right, now that the rabbis maybe might wear more than one hat, right? So there's one hat they have. Oh, someone has a question about halakha, and we will answer, we'll resolve your question. But that's not the only hat the rabbis wear. What other hat the rabbis wear? Well, give me a different rabbinic kind of enactment besides. Okay, what's one possibility? You're trying to figure out if you're allowed to play bananagrams on Shabbos, right? So you go, you are, right, it's okay. Okay, so you go ask a rabbi. Okay, so that's one question. Go to the Kiddush. Very important question. Can I play bananagrams on Shabbos? Okay, but what else do rabbis do? They make gzeirot. When you make a gzeira, right, when you enact something new, you're not interpreting the Torah. I mean, I might go to the rabbinic body because I know in Sukkot I'm supposed to take a pre-Eitz Hadar, but I don't know what a pre-Eitz Hadar is. Or I know it's an etrog, but I don't know how you define a kosher etrog. So I've got a question about Jewish law. I've got a question about halakha. So I'll go to the rabbinic authorities to try to get the answer. That's one hat they wear, but that's not the same as them deciding, let's be mitakeing something called a holiday called Hanukkah. It's not an interpretation of Torah. That is a novel enactment. And in the psukim, that's not the clear context of the psukim. So let's keep that thought in mind. Rabbis wearing different hats as Torah interpreters and as enactors of rabbinic gzeirot. Okay, great. Let's go famous Gemara in Shabbat. I'll just mention one thing for food for thought to you guys. As you guys know, the Gemara is very associative in its thinking. So it's not always obvious to someone where a certain halacha will be. So for example, if I ask you where Hanukkah is discussed in Chazal, so this is, I'm not going to answer this question right now, I'm just going to give you all food for thought. Don't call an answer. You can talk to me during lunch if you want. There's no Masechet Hanukkah. It's kind of interesting. Mishnayot barely address Hanukkah. Hanukkah is only addressed very tangentially in the Mishnaic world. Like there'll be a Mishnah in Bava Kama, what if your Hanukkah candles cause damages? What happens? Right, so Hanukkah comes up kind of tangentially in about four places. There is no Masechet Hanukkah. So where is Hanukkah actually discussed? Shabbat. Why? The second parak of Masechet Shabbat, Ben Malikin, starts discussing what wicks, oils, and candles are appropriate for Shabbos. Through an associative thinking, the next question is, what will be appropriate for Hanukkah? Next thing you know, you have six pages about Hanukkah. So that's why Hanukkah is found in Masechet Shabbat. So in the context, could be in some of your morning show, maybe you'll do some of those sugyot in the next couple weeks. So if you look at the Gemara in Shabbat, the Gemara wants to know, what bracha do you make on Erech Hanukkah? Ma'im v'vareich, v'vareich asher ketshanu v'sletzon ha'adhin eshel Hanukkah, v'heichan tzivana, but wait, God did not command us to keep mitzvah of Hanukkah, it is a rabbinic enactment. So how could we say, asher ketshanu mitzvah v'tzivanu? Rav Avya mir milo tasur, not surprisingly, your first arpsukim, well, the Torah says to listen to the rabbinic authority. So that's why you could say, asher ketshanu mitzvah v'tzivanu. In effect, the Torah did command us to keep Ner Chanukah. Listen to the elders, the sages, they're the right voice. Now, I think here it's a good methodological move to say, wait, if two different Chachamim quote two psukim, is there some reason why someone would prefer one pasuk? That begs the fundamental question, right? Is the reason why Lo Tasur is a better pasuk? Is the reason why Shalavicha is a better pasuk? Okay, any other thoughts offhand? Why won't be a better pasuk than the other? Hand? No. Okay, yeah, Akiva. Okay, excellent. So could be one has to do with the negative formulation versus the positive formulation. So we go to the Chatam Sofer, right? We'll skip the Ritva for a second. Chatam Sofer, Moshe Sofer from Hungary in the 1800s. Okay, well, general Jewish knowledge, guys. What was the line that he keeps getting quoted for? Famous line? Oh, very good. Isaac Stoltz is the Jewish historian. Guys, on the Jewish historian list, we have Isaac Stoltz and Ellie Charlotte so far. And actually, we'll put Josh Bluestein in there also, right? Okay, Josh Bluestein's in third on the Jewish historian list. Okay, so we got... He said, Chadash Asumata. Why did he say that? Well, in Hungary in the 1800s, he was trying to combat Reform Judaism. And they were making a lot of innovations. So he took this line from Halakha and cleverly applied it in a different way. What does it mean in the original context, Chadash Asumata Torah? It's about, you're not supposed to eat from the new grain till you brought the carbon to Omer on the second day of Pesach. If you ever walk around Brooklyn and it says in a sign on a bakery or pizza store, we use Yashan flour, that means they're still keeping this Halakha. Right, they won't use the new grain until the second day of Pesach passes. It's a whole conversation. It's all right, we're not going to get into it right now. So it, normally it's a statement about grain, but the Chatam Sofer used it polemically when he was fighting with Reform. Unfortunately, like, there's a rule in life, guys. You know, Chaim Soloveitchik once said this. If you have a line that's too good, don't use it. Because then everyone's just going to remember that line. They won't know anything else you did. The Chatam Sofer did a lot more other interesting things, and he didn't just say Chadash Asim Minotaur all the time. But he is known for that line in combating Reform. So the Chatam Sofer, for example, he wrote a good parish on Shas. So what do you have in the Chatam Sofer? But Nechem Omer, Shal Dichu Yegecha, Desfila Lo Shayach Asher Kitcham Sam Tzivanu, Alav Dol Tassar, the Lav Hu Shlilut. What's the problem? Alav is? Shlili. It's negative. Velo Tzivui. But Tzivanu has to relate to a positive. So maybe that's why the second Amor rejects the first Amor. Okay, great. What does the Ritva say, guys, in contrast? It gets back to our opening discussion. What was the context of Lo Tassar in the Torah? Interpreting Torah. Maybe Lotasar is not a reason to keep the mitzvah of Chanukah. Ner Chanukah is not interpretation of Torah. It's something novel. So maybe novel enactments are only justified by Shalavicha v'yagercha, Zekenecha v'yomulach, and not based on Lotasar. So we've got two reasons why someone might prefer Shalavicha to Lotasar. Either the active, positive-negative distinction, or independent Gzerot versus interpreting Torah. Ben.
Was it interpreting Torah or settling disputes?
I mean, the two are not so distant from each other, right? What are we disputing?
Well, we could be disputing a lot of things. We could be disputing, like, whose money is whose.
Right, but wouldn't we go about that based on Parshat Mishpatim or... Right? Okay, yeah, Gabriel.
You could say Rav Achan connected to the values of Torah.
We'll get there in a second, okay? Yeah, Mordechai.
But down the Pesach is run, like, before the Pesach Torah had a positive side?
Oh, because of Asit al-Piyad Davar. Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. Although the Gemara didn't say Asita, right? It does say Lotasar. It goes together. Okay, that is a good question. Mordechai, you're breaking your tradition. You're supposed to ask a good question like in the last minute of Shir. I had a whole nickname made up for you, actually. You're going to be like the Daka Tishim guy. But, all right, what can you do? Okay. you guys know that Hebrew phrase? Okay. If you do last minute in Israel, they say Daka Tishim. Who knows why? Yeah, very good. Okay. Here you guys. Let us go now to the Rambam. Okay, we're getting a very, very famous debate between Rambam and Ramban. Okay, now, the Gemara presents this very interesting puzzle, because there's a Gemara in Makot that says there's 613 mitzvot, but the Gemara does not, in no place enumerates what they are. So I find it like an interesting puzzle for the Rishonim. You know what number you're supposed to get to, but you have to figure out how to get there. How are you going to count the mitzvot and get 248 mitzvot asay and 365 lot asays? So the Rambam did so. The Rambam is a famous work, Sefer HaMitzvot. The Rambam also, what is a very interesting piece he did, he has 14 rules, shrashim, for what should count as a mitzvah. See, now he gives us a list, he gives us like a methodology, he gives us a rule book. What should be a mitzvah, what should not count as a mitzvah. For example, one thing the Rambam says, a mitzvah that's temporary is not a mitzvah, not one of the 613. So don't go outside to collect mud on Shabbos. That's not a mitzvah of the 613, because that was only for a very specific historical context. So what's the Rambam's first rule? Let's see what we got here. Hashorish harishon, first rule about mitzvot. Ain wa'oi limnot, a good word, guys, limnot. You count or enumerate, right? You go to the taxi, right? You insist that the guy use the monet, right? That's the legal obligation. Okay, ain wa'oi limnot because that mitzvah shinim midrabanan. Says the Rambam, well, don't count the mitzvah, that's rabbinic. And he says, even what's the phrase? What's the phrase Chazal use? 650 mitzvah were given at Sinai. So how could that include Rabbinic enactments? Okay, that seems pretty straightforward. Now, he doesn't tell you who he's talking about here, but there was an earlier authority who wrote a work called Halachot Gedolot. He's colloquially known as the Bahag, the Baal Halachot Gedolot. And the Rambam is often upset with the Baal Halachot Gedolot. And here he's upset because the Bahag on his list counted various rabbinic mitzvot. So if you look at the third line, he says, why am I saying this? Of Liruni Alam Fesha Tobo Rabin. Many made a mistake. Umanu Ner Chanaka, Umikra Megillah, Bechal Mitzvah Aseh. So I understand, how can you do that? How could you say Ner Chanaka is one of the Taryag mitzvot that were given at Sinai? Obviously, that happens later in Jewish history. She's upset with the Bahag for counting it. Okay. Then on the next line, he says, what else did the Bahag count? He also counted recital of Hallel. Look at his claim now, guys. Histakel mimishi yishmalo lashonam. Nemrila lamosha mi Sinai. The Chazar told me mitzvah they were given at Sinai. The Yimneh created a Hallel. How could you count Hallel? Sheshavach bo Davidol avashal makele taleh. What's the Rambam's historical question here, guys? How could Hallel be mitzvah deraita after all?
You can start with David.
David wrote Tilim. Now, this is not my topic at all, but I have to ask you a question. Should the Rambam be asking this question to the Bahag or not? Is this a good... Well, I'll freeze it. Is this a good question or not a good question? Akiva. Oh, the Rambam is the last person in the world who should be asking this question to the Bahag. Okay, because?
Oh, because the Rambam doesn't like the formulae.
According to Rambam, what is the mitzvah deraita of Tilim? To pray once a day. Which words?
Any.
You choose. So the Rambam has a model of this, that there's a mitzvah where the mitzvah is more ephemeral, and maybe the definitive wording came later in history. So couldn't the Bahag just answer, there's a mitzvah deraita to say Hallel, but once David wrote Tilim, it became the formal text of Hallel. So this bothered me for many years. In fact, it's the only time this happened in my life. I once wrote an article trying to answer the question, but it's never been published because I actually decided it was totally wrong. Okay, go down this happened. Okay, so I have an unpublished article about, which is wrong. Yeah, Isaac, you have an idea?
Yeah, I just want to reply.
Akiva?
It says, we quote Ha-Halel, implying some like set body that you're supposed to read, as opposed to Le-Halel Hashem.
Okay, interesting. Okay, but question of the guy. I guess you have to work out why the bracha was formed that way to begin with. Like, how did Hallel become, why is it Hallel? This is what I was trying to argue in the article. Why did Hallel demand a fixed text from the set, from the outset, where tefillah started more fluid and then became fixed over time? I think you're on the right track, but I think you want to push a little bit further. What is it about Hallel that it was always fixed, and what is it about tefillah that began fluid and became fixed? Yeah, Isaac.
I think
the Rambam
just asked him, why would you list the Hallel specifically? But it's
davening. Hallel could be a separate mitzvah from davening.
But then it's not saying, then it's not deraita. It's not one of the
no, same. Well, you have to figure out what the, maybe they come up with some source where Hallel is deraita. No, but that's a different objection, though. Then you're just objecting. There's no pasuk that tells you have to say Hallel. That's not what the Rambam's objection is right now. His is that Hallel can't be deraita because Hallel originates with David.
Okay, but I thought the way you said it was that the Bahag, he might say that, oh, there's a mitzvah deraita.
No, I wasn't saying that. Saying that the Bahag could use the Rambam's model for tefillah and use it as his own model for Hallel. That's what I was trying to say. Like, why should the Rambam think this is impossible? It can't be because the words came later. The words of the Amidah also came later. But yet, tefillah is a mitzvah in the Torah. Okay, we're good? All right, great. That's a side topic. Back to our issue here. Now the Rambam knocks out what someone might suggest. Okay? Look what he says here. On the next line. I know what you're going to tell me. Why is it Moshe Mishinai? Yeah, God told Moshe, one day it'll be Chanukah and you'll have this mitzvah. The Rambam says, it's not worth even confronting. Right? It's not his conception of how change tradition works. We didn't know the Chanukah story ahead of time, and therefore it just can't be. And we're back to our question that the Bahag should not have listed Ner Chanukah as a mitzvah. However, let's clarify one thing. When the Rambam thinks Ner Chanukah, according to Rambam, I'm not going to read inside, but at the end of the paragraph, why do we have to keep Ner Chanukah? Indeed, it's because of Lot Asur. So why shouldn't you count it as a mitzvah? Because all the Dini Derabanan are really
one mitzvah,
exactly. So you're not going to have a separate mitzvah for Ner Chanukah and Mikra Megillah and 100 Brachot and Hallel. They're all subsumed under Lo Tasur. And indeed, the Rambam counts Lo Tasur. Now notice, we get back to what I said in the beginning. The Rambam clearly thinks that Lo Tasur relates not only to rabbinic interpretation, but also to new takanot. Okay, so this is the sum. We had a couple points in Rambam. Number one, you shouldn't count mitzvah that Rabbanan as Taryag. Number two, the Bahag made a mistake in counting Ner Chanukah, Megillah, Hallel. We raised some questions about his critique of Hallel. And finally, Rambam says, and don't tell me that Moshe knew about Chanukah. He doesn't accept that possibility. And finally, he says that all the Rabbanans are subsumed under Lo Tasur. Okay, well, good so far? Okay, good? What's bothering you?
If that were true, why wouldn't Rambam also suggest there's just one bracha to say for all of them?
Did you get that from your Chavruti? Just thought of that right now. Okay, excellent. See, guys, Chael is not just the yeshiva poet. He has other talents also. Excellent. So, guys, I was going to save this for the end of this year, but let's go to the last source, guys. Once you got ready, Chael raised it. This is a great source. Yeah, he says that maybe at that point, every mitzvah d'rabbanan is really one and the same thing, and they should all share the identical bracha. So there's a great Yushalmi. Guys, you guys should make this Yushalmi famous. Okay, no one knows this Yushalmi. Here we go. I only know because Meshech Chachma Kotze. Look at the Yushalmi. Ketzad Mavarchan al Ner Chanukah. Now, we know what the Bavli's answer was. What was the Bavli's answer? Asher Kitshan Mustafa Tzivan al-Hadak Ner. And indeed, that's the bracha we make. Rav Amar Bracha Shekeshazor al-Mitzvah al-Hadak Ner Chanukah. Okay, great. Sounds roughly similar to our bracha. Hakol Modim B'Yom Tov Rishon. Okay, now we're shifting gears, guys. We're not talking Chanukah, we're talking Netilat Lulav. How many days is there a mitzvah in HaTorah to take a lulav outside the Beit HaMikdash? One. You have to, what does the pasuk say? Ulakachtem lachem v'yom harishon. There's a 7-day mitzvah in the Mikdash. We today take it 7 days everywhere as a zecher l'Mikdash. Okay, here we go. V'yom tov harishon shomer al netilat lulav. Everyone agrees. Of course. It's a mitzvah of lulav. It's a mitzvah of deraita. That's the bracha. Ma pligin. What's the debate? Bishar kol hayamim. Every other day. Rav Yochanan omer al netilat lulav. That's the bracha. Rav Yeshua omer Al mitzvah tzikeinim. Your point exactly. It's a great theory. Maybe the mitzvah I'm fulfilling when I take a lulav is not lulav taking. The mitzvah I'm fulfilling is listening to rabbinic authorities. And Chael's right. At that point, maybe every Dorban's bracha should be al mitzvah tzikeinim. Excellent point. Okay, we'll come back to that. Okay, great. Now let's go back to Ramban. Excellent point, Chael. Okay, now the Ramban famously wrote criticisms of the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvah. What is the most famous criticism? Come on. Ah, there you go. Who said it? Okay. Wait, Elisha, how come you didn't call it right away? Okay. The Ramban famous does not count living in Israel as an obligation, as a mitzvah. And the Ramban says, how could you have left that out? It's a famous debate. But the Ramban also comments on the Shrashim. Okay, all right? We're good? Okay, so let's see what the Ramban says. So he notices that the Rambam counts everything in the Lo Tasser. Right, including rabbinic interpretation and rabbis as main zero. Can I look at the second paragraph of Ramban? Okay, tell me what you notice about this paragraph. Hinei harab, and I'll tell you a good rule for life, which I've never been able to figure out how to teach, but maybe you'll get it anyway. Hinei harab bona chomag vola saviv de rechachamim. What's the Rambam trying to do? Build a huge wall to protect rabbinic authority. Avohi kaperet snofel navaba choma niskva asher pitom lafeta yavo shivra. What's going to happen with this big wall? It's going to crumble. Okay, what do you notice about that line? Okay, what else besides the fact that... who said that? It's much more poetic than it needs to be. Okay, I have a good rule. I've never been able to explain to students how to do this, but because it's just intuitive. If a line is more poetic than it needs to be, what's probably going on?
It's kind of a weak point for
that. Anybody? Nope. Okay, I'll give you an example, guys. Let's try the following. Let us say, I want to say that Andrew Levine is the biggest guy in yeshiva. Okay? But instead of saying Andrew Levine's the biggest guy in yeshiva, I say, Andrew Levine, he bestrides everybody else like a colossus. Okay, like, why would I say that?
Because you're trying to sound smart. You want to be dramatic.
Mordechai Blau? You don't do it? What? You refuse? Okay. Yeah. Yes, Maishi Markowitz. That is a line from Julius Caesar. Right? That's what they say about Caesar in the eulogy. So often you'll use an extra poetic line because... Right, because that's a famous line. It has resonance. Right, so when a rabbinic writer, it's a good rule for life, guys. If it gets much more poetic than it needs to be, take out your concordance. It's probably paying off a pasuk. So I unfortunately do not know Tanakh well enough to get the line, but I'm good at picking up and when it's too poetic. So I open my concordance, and there's the pasuk in Yeshayahu, Yeshayahu Perek Lamed. Yeah, Yeshayahu Perek Lamed describes the wall and a breach in the wall. That's just a good rule for life. It happens a lot in Rav Kook. You're in Rav Kook, and Rav Kook's always flowery. But if it gets even more flowery, he's probably playing off a pasuk or a chazal. Okay, got the rule. Good rule. Okay, Mashi.
So what's the point of the illusion?
You want to know, does, okay, that's really interesting question, actually. So there's two possible reasons why I would use, this is actually a very important point, because I'm going to do a little Tanakh tangent for 1 second. Okay, there's nothing to do with the Shirkoi, but it's good to be aware of. Okay, what's one of the modern Tanakh study methods to find what's called intertextuality, right? That some Prakim of Tanakh are alluding to other Prakim of Tanakh. And often you'll use parallel phraseology. One of the things that's quite fascinating is that this method actually skips the Rishonim. Like, who was using this method before the modern scholars? Chazal. The Medrash uses this all the time. Give one famous example. There twice in Tanakh where it uses a phrase, either... Okay, Mordechai, I'm sorry. It's a problem coming. I share it. He's heard it 1,000 times before. Okay, Mordechai, you don't have to come next week. Okay, that... actually, you have to come. Ravati's giving sure. There'll be, like, new lines, new jokes. It'll be great. Okay, so the phrase Zakag Dola Mara and Zakag Dola Mara appears twice in Tanakh. I don't know where the 2 times are.
Megillah.
Okay, Megillah, that's there. There's a Zakag Dola Mara and... Nope. There is Vayizaku there, but not Zakag Dola Mara. Anybody? We read it recently.
Oh, what is it?
Ben Isley, let's go.
Hagar?
Nope. Esav, yes, Esav cries out with its Zakag Dola Mara. So what does the Midrash say? Somehow Yaakov pained Esav, and he deserves some kind of punishment for that. So his descendants are punished by having a Zakag Dola Mara from the descendants of Esav. So you have the Midrash to make this connection to the phrase that appears twice. So I have a little criticism of this approach to life, I think, because I was great there, about when some of the moderns use it. The fact that you use a previous phrase could be you want to thematically connect the two. You could just use the previous phrase not because you thematically want to connect the two, just because it's a good phrase, it's a powerful phrase. And I think the kind of modern assumption is if the phrase is parallel, that must mean that there's a... So it really relates to your point. It could be just use the phrase because it has power. Rambam is when, I don't know, because otherwise, if you go with the other assumption, guys, what's going on here? You have to look up Yeshayahu Perek Lamed. Rambam clearly is saying there's something about the Rambam's position in Lo Tasur that reminds me of Yeshayahu Perek Lamed. I don't think that's necessarily true. Just Yeshayahu Perek Lamed had a good phrase. So use it. I have a great example. Here's my killer example. Okay? Killer example. The phrase Kacha Yaseh Le'ish appears twice in all of Tanakh. Okay? Where does it say Kacha Yaseh Le'ish in all of Tanakh? So again, we're back to Megillah there. And Chalitza, when you, the brother decides not to marry the deceased's widow, his brother's widow, right, then they call out Kacha Yaselish. I do not think there's a thematic connection between Chalitza and Mordechai Naaman. Okay? It just was, it's a phrase. It could be, it happens to appear twice. It's a phrase with resonance. But if you look at Yoni Grossman's book, he tries to make a connection. Yeah. No, but this doesn't prove anything one way or the other. It's just a certain powerful expression about a wall crumbling. It's not an argument. I think he has arguments. He's got plenty of arguments. There's not some poetic flourish to cover up weak argumentation. I think he's got some good arguments. Okay? All right, so let's go to the Rambam's arguments. So what's the problem here, guys? What's the obvious problem with the Rambam? Obvious problem with the Rambam? Yeah, Gabe Roth. Yes. According to Rambam, it seems like every Drabbanan is actually... Adoraita. But all through the Shas, we have halachic distinctions between Adoraita and... Don't know, the Rambam's telling me, why do I have to light Hanukkah candles? Because Hashem told me in the Torah to listen to the Rabbanan. So that means I'm fulfilling a Adoraita mandate. So then every Drabbanan and Adoraita is the same. So let's talk about a couple of distinctions. Most famously, we have Safek Adoraita L'chumra, Safek Drabbanan L'kula. But the Rambam would say every Drabbanan is really Adoraita. Now that we have a lot of other leniencies, all the time this comes up, guys, all through the Gemara. Rambam mentions one other one. What else does he mention besides the suffix scenario? What else does he mention? Those of you who learned Pesachim should remember this. What else does he say? Okay, there's an idea sometimes we can relax standards if something's Drabbanan. There's a Gemara in Pesachim that suggests we'll believe a Katan's testimony that the house was checked. There's no Chametz there. Now, all through the halachic system, we do not accept the testimony of a katan. A katan's not believed to say it's my money or that the divorce happened. We don't allow a katan's testimony. So what is the Gemara's explanation? How come a katan's believed for bedikat chametz? Because Drabbanan, you could be leaning about the runs made the rules. They decided to accept the testimony of a katan. But one more thing, guys. Let's give you one more example. I'd like to sneak in some more general Torah knowledge. And all kinds of other things. I'll give you another example. I was discussing with my shiur today how to milk cows on Shabbos. Right? Cows need to be milked, but It's a melacha to milk a cow. So what was the method through the medieval period? To ask your non-Jewish neighbor to milk the cow. What was the argument? Once you're doing Amir L'Nachri, it's not a deraita, it is a drabanan. Tzar Balei Chaim can't overcome deraitas, but Tzar Balei Chaim can overcome drabanan. So throughout the system, we see, again and again, leniencies and drabanans that are not present for deraitas. How could that be if every drabanan is a deraita? Jordan.
What about like a pasuk asking a kid to have a letter?
Oh, that's a cute question. I think I would say that's not really testimony, but that's an interesting question. It's not like a courtroom testimony. Just think for a second.
What's the question?
It's an interesting question. It's very, very clever. There is a case when you're not sure what a letter looks like, if it's a puzzle or not, where you have to have a child come up.
By the way,
what's the logic? Why do you have a child and not an adult?
Because they're not biased.
Exactly. The adult knows what the word's supposed to be, so the adult can't really look at it objectively. Oh, that's really interesting. Rabbi, what do you think? Is that like eight of them some kind? I'm tempted to say somehow it's not aided, it's a different category, but let me think. It's a good question, Jordan. Very clever question. Yeah.
That happened in my
okay. What the kid Boskin? What? The kid got it wrong. The kid got it right. Just the Torah got it wrong. Right. Okay. Anybody else? We're good? Okay. Jordan, that was a very good question. Maishi, what did you say before? Okay. Yeah. No, come on. Look, you have to forget what the Bahag was doing when he counted all those things. You're right. You might see the Bahag's even stronger than Rambam. Unless the Bahag somehow thought that the Rabbanans can be part of the Taryag, even though they're really the Rabbanan, not the Raita. You have to figure out what the Bahag was doing when he counted it. It's a good question, ma'am, and I'm going to leave it be for now. Okay? We're good? Okay, great. So we have got some very important questions. Let's turn the page and think about ways to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the Ramban mentions one famous way out. Pretty famous way out here in the top of the page. Ulai tit akesh. What's to be an akshan?
Stubborn.
Very good, very good. Maybe you'll be stubborn. Was that from elementary school also, Chad? Okay, guys. Everyone should have gone to Zalman chapter of elementary school. You'd speak Hebrew. Okay. The Tomer ledadarav, kimash amber b'chom hakom, lakel b'divrei sofim, hu b'mechila uvetnai meitam. What's the claimer, guys? Maybe when the Ramban made a takana, what'd they do? They built in all kinds of clauses. Let's say the Rabbanan want you to, make brachot on every time you eat. So they say, so you have to make a brachot, bring it in Mizona, and you have a piece of chocolate cake. But what did they also put in? What was the clause? If you have it, actually, Birka Nen is a bad example, sorry. You have to make a brachot before you do a mitzvah. You have to do a brachot on Nitzil Luluf. Okay? But what clause did they put in? If you're not sure whether you made a brachot or not, then you don't have to. Right? They built that clause in. And deraitas come without that clause attached. So how does it play out differently? See, if you have a subject deraita, since there's no clause like that, I have to be stringent. When I have a subject drabanan, even though every drabanan is a deraita, all those leniencies are built-in clauses, right? Now, to be a little bit fair, the Ramban's going to knock this out, but I think there's something nice about it. If you said this, why the Ramban do that? Why the Ramban do that? And I never noticed this line, but I've thought this year before, till today. Look at the second line. Why did they do that? K'dei l'chalek u'lafrish bin mashu dvar tov mashu dvar mivram. That's kind of interesting. Why are they building all these clauses? Precisely so that we don't think that there's no difference between something that comes from Dvar Hashem and something that comes from the Rabbanan. So it's a way of differentiating. It was a way of differentiating. Since every Rabbanan is on some level Doraita, we need all these clauses to make a distinction. Can everyone agree that if you said all those clauses, you might solve the problem for Rambam? But it's a little bit of a difficult idea. When the Rabbanan made takana, they built it like 100 clauses. If it's Safik, you don't have to do it. If it's a katan, you could believe him. If it's Tzar Balei Chaim, then it doesn't apply. Like, there were 4,000 clauses built into every takana de Rabbanan to explain the discrepancies. Somewhat of a difficult idea. Okay, we're good so far? Okay, but now let's realize one thing. So what does the Ramban himself say at the end? The Ramban says, what is Lotusser encompass? Okay. Exactly. Getting back to our opening distinction for the Ramban, Lotus is only when they are in interpretive mode and not when they are in enactment, Zera Takan mode. So we're great for the Ramban. So let's talk about that's a famous question, guys. The major advantage of Ramban and the major disadvantage. What's the major advantage of Ramban? It is very easy to explain why Safek Drabanan Lakil, right? Because the Drabanans are not all Why, if we're not sure about Ner Chanukah, could be lenient? Because Ner Chanukah in no way is a... It's not a deraita on any level. There's nothing deraita about Ner Chanukah. We're not interpreting Torah in Ner Chanukah. We're making a new rabbinic enactment. So it's easy to explain all the leniencies for the Rabbanim. That's great. The Ramban's looking great. Okay, what's the major weakness for Ramban? Okay. Excellent. Wait. Why do we have to listen to rabbinic enactments? Right? When the Rabbanan are interpreting Pesukim, we know why we have to listen to them. But when they're making Ner Chanukah, Mikra Megillah, Hallel, etc., there's now no longer a source for their authority. So he solved one problem tremendously and generated another. So this is a very nice debate because there's a huge advantage to Rambam. Rambam has grounded rabbinic authority very well, right? The big wall that he built. Ramban has explained why there's the right to the Rabbanan distinctions, but it hasn't so much explained what the source of rabbinic authority is. Okay? Yeah, Majid.
I don't understand how the Rambam can say, or the Ramban can say, only like the rabbinic laws are the right, that's like the back of the 13 principles, when there's like a pasuk about the shal of Yitzhak pasuk.
Okay, excellent. So, okay, Majid has a good question. The Gemara in Shabbos Chaf Gimel sounds like who's right? Who's the family's right now? Doesn't sound like Rambam's right? Because Gemara says, what is Ner Chanukah grounded in? And one Amor says Lotasar. And even the other Amor doesn't like Lotasar thinks we have a source based on Shalavicha. It's a very good question. It's an excellent question. Rav Nuril mentioned to me during Chavruta time, and I was looking at it in the Ramban, and I never had a chance to finish the paragraph before it was too late. But we'll look at it afterwards.
Yeah,
what would you say?
At the beginning of the class, I mean, you could interpret Shalavicha in like two ways. You said it's about like positive and negative, mm-hmm. and also like creative.
Okay. Right, no, but your question is still a question, though, meaning the Gemara grounds Ner Chanukah in a pasuk from the Torah. So whichever pasuk you use, it does sound like you could trace Ner Chanukah back to some... Meaning, I'm saying Meshi's question, whether I use Lotas or Shalavicha doesn't sound to be the issue. If Chanukah is rooted in the Deraita, any principle Deraita, you get back to Rambam's position and not Ramban. Yeah?
No, there's the kind of Lotas sort. There might be other Sukkim Torah that might give a big authority.
No, but... If you have any other, whatever pasuk you have the same kasha. What difference does it make which pasuk it gets from? What's the Ramban's question? Why are the raitas more stringent than the Rabbanans? What's the question predicated on? The Rabbanans are based on a pasuk. That question is the same question whether the pasuk is Lotasar or Shalavicha. Okay, you have to work out a theory why Shalavicha somehow is not as powerful to write the basis as Lotasar. I'm not sure what that theory would be. You'd have to work out some theory like that.
Lotasar is an explicit command, whereas Shalavicha is a pasuk in Hazunah.
Okay.
So that's completely
correct. But we like Sefer Dvarim. I mean, if you told me it was a pasuk in Mishlei, that might have been something.
No, I'm saying that the it's Mifurash in the Torah that Lotasar, like that's a clear command, and this comes up later, I think, in.
No, that's fine. But then you'd have to tell me a bit. You have to tell me that there's a third day out there that thinks that Lotasar and Shalavicha don't really work on some level. Neither one really is a good source for Ner Chanukah.
I still think you can make the distinction between them in the sense that like Lotasar is the source that like there's a difference between the drash and explicit.
Okay. It's kind of you're saying maybe Shalavicha is some kind of a smacht almost.
Yeah.
Okay. If you say it that way, I think you can work it out. Okay, very good, Ellie. Okay, well, good so far, great. Okay, so let's try to answer the problem for both people. Okay, so we got the great dilemma set up. If you're a Rambam, we got a good source for rabbinic authority. We can't explain why the Raitas and the Rabbanans are different. If you're Ramban, you can explain why the right and the Rabbanans are different. But you're looking for a source for rabbinic authority. So let us introduce two people here, okay? Okay, Rav Elchanan Wasson is an important Rav from the 20th century. He was a student of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, which means, what method of learning did he practice? Yes, the Brisker Derech. Rav Don, have you quoted Rav Elchanan yet this year?
No.
Okay, very disappointing. Okay, so he... Oh, is his Talmud of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, his beautiful works of Lungus, very clear. I think he's the clearest Brisker. He was in America fundraising during World War II and was warned not to go back to Europe, but he said, I have to go back to my yeshiva. And he went back and he was killed by the Nazis. So it's a heroic thing that he did to go back. He was a pretty rabid anti-Zionist, okay, and also did not like going to college. So he was not exactly a modern Orthodox Gadol, but so what? His Torah is great Torah. So that's what we have here in Rav Chaim Wasserman. Okay, so he's trying to figure out the Ramban. V'teim gdol lomarkein, dimkein meizatam anu chayvin lishmor len. Here's the question, right? What's the problem for Ramban? If Lotasar does not relate to rabbinic takana, why do we have to listen? He's a very surprising idea in the next piece. What does he want to claim? We have a lot of faith in rabbis through the generations. What's our assumption?
God agreed.
Yeah, they do a good job of working out what God would want to happen at this point in Jewish history. Like, it's let's use an easy example, guys. Use one that we won't find frustrating. Right? The Chanukah story happens. It's an amazing salvation. What did the Rabbanim decide? Surely we should have some kind of commemoration for this event. Okay, so what's Am Yisrael's assumption at that point? God would agree. He'd put a stamp of approval on that. So therefore, why do we have to keep it based on that? We kind of assume the divine stamp of approval. It fits with our value system. But why is it not deraita yet? Because the bottom line is, what makes something deraita? When there's explicit command. So even if I think, right, and here someone said before, I gave a nice phrase about values, this might happen all the time. We might think that there's no explicit command, but a religious person with good values would go beyond the law. I think this happens all the time, both in ethics and ritual, right? You'd have a sense of going beyond, but the going beyond, would still, you might think you're fulfilling God's will, but that still doesn't make it deraita. I'll give you a very simple case. Let us say I see Natana Leaf lose. Actually, no, I don't see him lose it. Okay? I have to work out the case. Okay, he loses money. And then he despairs before I find it. Okay? So in theory, I could now keep the money. But nonetheless, I do amazing investigative work and get the money back there. Okay? So I wasn't chayav to do that as far as the mitzvah of Hashavah is concerned. But I would say I'm totally convinced I'm fulfilling God's will at that point. Even though it's a mitzvah or not, it is God's will. But that doesn't make it a formal deraita. So it says Rabbi Chanan, where does rabbinic authority come from? We're confident that the rabbis are doing a good job. Therefore, we think it's God's will to listen to them. But that does not make it deraita. So that's solving the Ramban's problem. There would be a ground for rabbinic authority, even though deraita and Ramban are still different. Yeah?
Why are we that confident?
Okay, that's a good question. Yeah, it only works if you have a lot of confidence in the rabbis. Okay, it's true. It only works on that level. I agree. Although I will say one thing, though. I have a friend named Aryeh Klapper. He's a rabbi in New England. He used to do a very interesting thing with, you know?
No, just doing.
He used to do a very interesting thing with his classes. It's true. There's always high school students and post-high school. They're always frustrated with rabbinic authority. So he used to ask his class to follow. Okay, you guys like rabbinic authority? Okay, give me a better method. What would you like? Would you like, you know, religious anarchy? Would you like, you know, we'll take a popular vote on every question that comes up? So again, it's worthy of thinking about his question. Yeah, Gabe Roth.
Would you say that this confidence that we have in the rabbis comes from the Lord of Swords?
You're saying, there's a certain irony to what you're saying, Gabe. Not irony, it's actually very appropriate. We're taking the value of Lot Asur and applying it beyond Lot Asur to say that there's values beyond, right? Because according to Ramban, Lot Asur is not addressing the scenario. Lot Asur is only addressing rabbinic interpretation. You see what I'm saying? Yeah, Maishi.
I think what Gabe's trying to say is that there's like a mitzvah, like just to listen to the rabbi, like a separate mitzvah, just to like agree with what the rabbis say. Like that's what Lotus
are. Okay, you're on the right track, guys. You guys are basically anticipating the Meshach Chachma. You're basically anticipating the Meshach Chachma. Ben.
Doesn't Rashi say that we should listen to the rabbis even if they're wrong? If Rashi says that we should listen to them if they're wrong, it seems that Rabbi Hanan is saying they aren't wrong.
Go, first of all, there's a very, really interesting topic, guys. Ben Eisenstein's right. You did Rashi on the Pesukim? Okay, excellent. What's the language of the Pasuk? Lo tasum derech shigil lecha yamin u'smol. There's a famous drasha in the Sifri. Even if they tell you that, right is left, one is right. Now, I'm going to do something a little bit radical. Okay, you guys may not know, but there's a Yushalmi that says the exact opposite. Right? Only listen to them if they tell you that right is right and left is left. So how do you reconcile the Sifri and the Yushalmi is really interesting, but not for us right now. But since you guys like rabbinic authority, you should all investigate this topic. But I wouldn't make too much about that. Okay? Yeah.
Is this the same thing as the name of Shatakit?
Yeah, it's the same idea. Meaning, we have halacha gives you a certain bedrock, then we apply those values beyond the bedrock halacha. So Rabbi Chanan would say, we're confident that the rabbis do a good job of applying those values beyond the bedrock halacha. And that's why we listen to them. But that doesn't make it the right time. Just like when you go to Fnimah Shurta Din, it's not absolutely a mitzvah or obligatory or the like. Okay? Yeah, Mordechai.
Wouldn't that make the bracha difficult?
Wouldn't that make the bracha difficult?
The problem is that we say Hashem ki l'shem when we sit
down. If you hold like Rabbi Chanan. Look, I guess Rabbi Chanan would say if I know I'm fulfilling God's will, that's enough to use that formulation. How's that?
Yeah,
Does that work? Although you could ask me then, how come we don't make brachot on like lifnei mishur adin, that kind of thing? I guess I have to be more formalized than now. Rav David.
I would read it a little more narrowly. Not saying that anything goes. It was part of our confidence in the chachamim. The chachamim, when you're legislating, are tapping into values that are obvious.
Okay.
There was kind of an example. So you have contracts in the Torah that talk about sovereignty, talk about restoration of Jewish peoplehood.
Okay.
So it's not as if like the chachamim Ben was saying. Sometimes the chachamim were saying that if the chacham pays stand on your head, that counts. There was our confidence stems from the fact that it's kind of obvious to the interpreter, to the person looking at the interpretation. They're tapping into pre-existing categories in the Torah.
Okay.
If it doesn't give me, it's not as broad. It's kind of like, well,
you don't like the passage of the Mishnah. Then what are you objecting to?
It's not that they're smart. In other words, that since the interpretation is upfront,
yeah,
and the values are obvious to everyone,
okay,
assume that it's reasonable. That's exactly. It's not that we think that they're smarter than us, or that we're going to give them authority for social reasons. It's that
I see what you're saying. Okay, that's fine. I'm not sure that's so different than what I formulated, but okay. Yeah, Gabe.
The 13 principles come from Torah Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
Would the Ramban think that's the elaboration of...
Yeah, let me just clarify everything, guys. The Ramban doesn't mean that any rabbinic creativity is by definition derabbanan. Right? You don't have to stand your gomito means that everything was a tradition. Let's say a kal v'chomer. You certainly don't need a tradition to say a kal v'chomer. So if the Ramban didn't say a kal v'chomer to interpret a mitzvah, what status does that have? That's the right, even though it's a certain amount of rabbinic creativity. Right? It doesn't, right? There can be creativity in the Deraita framework. But when you make a standalone takana, that's not creativity in the Deraita framework. Okay, good? Yeah, Joe.
I feel like doesn't this whole idea about looking at the values of rich tracks and rich way and then kind of, and then use that to allow you to have Asher Kishanu. I think we have to draw, there has to be like a line and a point, because if we kind of keep thinking that, then we take everything like proprietary and unique out of the real Deraita. If we just keep on thinking and all.
No, but what about the fact that there's still halachic differences between Deraita and Deraita? Right?
Yeah, so
that we are maintaining a distinction.
So my question is just like in the Kabbalah sense.
Right.
I feel like it's just you won't be at the same place. I think there should be something unique about the strictly Deraita.
Okay, and that's not true according to Bachanis there?
No, I feel like this is not going to be the same thing, because in your head, okay, this is a stretch.
Okay, so I'm not sure I'm missing your question. Is the question that Rekom Bachanis and Dorban Deraitas are the same, or that you won't take Dorban seriously?
Is that you won't take the Dorban seriously, because it's not stretching it based off the value.
No, but what if I think what Dorban would protest, what if you take values very seriously? Right. Maybe the seriousness of life is not just things that are formally mitzvot. Being able to apply values beyond and creating new drabbanans might be a serious endeavor.
Then you might have less than.
I'll give you. Can you give a bad example, Joe? Can I give you a bad example? Okay, there are people in this room who probably take Yom HaAtzmaut more seriously than Hanukkah. Actually, that's how you use Hanukkah. Yom HaAtzmaut more seriously than Shmini Atzeret. Okay. Now, if you'd be a halachic man, you could criticize that. How can you take Yom HaAtzmaut more seriously than Shmini Atzeret? After all, Shmini Atzeret is in Chumash and Yom HaAtzmaut is not. And so what would they say? If Eli Charlotte had to defend himself, say yes, but from a Jewish values perspective, what could be better than Yom HaAtzmaut? Right, the restoration of sovereignty after 1900 years of that waste of time called exile. Right, you'd say that Egypt is the greatest thing ever. So sometimes you could take things from a values perspective extremely seriously. You don't seem happy, Joe. All right, we'll debate it more during lunch. Maji.
Where does Rabbi Elchanan get the full 613 if he only gets the laws?
No, it's not a problem. The 613 doesn't incorporate the Rabbanans, right?
Well, yeah, so I'm saying, so I get that he is like enough to fit like below into the 613, but like, how does he get 613 laws straight from the Torah? I feel like that's not...
No, why is that? But why is that a question specifically according to Rabbi Elchanan? Doesn't everybody have to address the same? Except the Baha'i, right?
Because all the other opinions like have some aspect of the rabbi's view being a part of the 613.
Right, don't forget, even the Rambam, who thought that every Durban is rooted in the Deraita, didn't count them among the, remember? He said they're all subsumed under Lo Tasur.
So are there full 613?
Yeah, if you're really curious, Maji, open up a Rambam, glance at the table of contents, see how he gets the 613. Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit tangential to the 613, but why do we care how many mitzvot there are?
Well, if there could be no, by the way, if there could be no Gemara and Makot, in some ways we wouldn't have to count. I think Beckmar and Makar got the ball rolling.
Well, right, but like it seems from the fact that there are several different ways to count how many mitzvot there are, and they don't all contain the same sets. It seems like there are actually way more than 600.
Okay, so let me mention one thing, guys. I'll say one other radical thought before we get to Meshach Hakam. It is not obvious that it's universally agreed that there are 613 mitzvot. Okay, why is that? The Ramban makes a very sharp point. There's certain things in the Torah, there's a debate if they're mitzvah or not. Okay, can we think of an example like that? There's a gumit. Yes, sir? Okay, that's a good example, actually. Where'd you get that from? Okay, very good. Body, excellent. Okay, an Ochi Hashem, excellent example. How about the monarchy? There's a debate if there's a mitzvah to have a melech or not. If you think everybody thinks there's 613, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to mix and match all the time. If you and I have machloket with melech's a mitzvah, we have to have a opposite machloket whether an Ochi Hashem melech is a mitzvah. Right, if you and I have a debate whether Kedoshim Tiyu is a mitzvah, we have to write some other thing which we are. But it's not clear that happens in Shas, that every time there's a machlokas or something's a mitzvah, there's some other balancing act being done to maintain 613. So the Ramban does raise that question in the first Shorash. It's not obvious everybody agrees. But I think what happened is once you had the Gemara in Mako, people were trying to count up and get the 613.
Why?
All right. Okay, guys, last thing here. So let us go to the Meshech Chachma. Okay, so the Meshech Chachma is from Meir Simcha Kohen from Dvinsk, wrote very two important svarim. Right, Or Sameach on the Rambam, obviously he's playing with his name, right? Meir Simcha, Or Sameach. And Meshech Chachma is Meir Simcha Kohen. That's his parish on Chumash. It is a wonderful parish. He passed away pretty recently. He passed away in 1926. My grandfather knew him. Okay, Meshech Chachma. Let's see what he has here in the Meshech Chachma. So he says as follows. He's going to answer for the Rambam. Okay, you know, maybe we'll do it. Can we do it inside? We'll do it outside, actually, because we're running out of time. Okay, what's his basic argument, guys? What's the Meshech Chachma's basic argument? That when the Torah, yeah, Gabe?
That God basically wanted a way for halakha to evolve according to the time period.
Yes.
And that was like a social construct.
Good. So what's the difference between the Derayta and the Rabbanan?
He says they actually can be wrong.
Okay, excellent. When we get an idea from the Torah, we know it's what God wants. He's the source of it. So that's clear. We know it's right. We know it's eternal. It's locked in. The Rabbanan says, Rameh Simcha, they're wonderful people, but they're also human. So when they make an enactment, we don't know 100% sure. By the way, somebody's the opposite of Rabbi Chanan, right? Think about it. We're not 100% confident that this is
wrong.
Divine will. So why do we have to listen to them? So it says Rameh Simcha, because you need you can't have anarchy. You need to respond to new situations, like the Hanukkah story. So Hashem wanted to be some kind of authority figure that we would have to listen to. But at that point, there's a huge difference here. Let's say it very sharply, guys. When we're listening to Derayta, what are we doing? We know that that specific act is the right thing. When we listen to the Rabbanan, in a certain sense, what are we promoting? Not the specific act, but the community thing, the authority thing, right? What we're actually doing is maintaining that there should be some authority structure. We'll get to why this solves the problem for Rambam in 1 second, but he makes a brilliant analogy. This is a really good analogy. Who else do you have to listen to in life?
Parents.
What? Okay, parents in some scenarios, and?
Government.
Yeah, the king. There's a mitzvah to listen to the king. Now, we know in the history of the monarchy, you know, kings are certainly not always lined up with the divine will. So why do you have to listen to the king, says Rabbi Simcha? Not because we're sure the king gets things right. Again, because you can't have anarchy. Right? You need to have some kind of authority structure for society to function. So again, when I listen to, let's say the king tells me to, I don't know, to rub my tummy on Tuesdays. So there's no value to rubbing my tummy on Tuesdays, but there is a value to... Let's see the king. So that's the value that I'm fulfilling when I do that mitzvah. I think with a king, he's obviously right. And then he wants to apply that to the Drabanan. And he points out a few interesting things. What models do you have with the Drabanan you don't have with the Derayta? A Derayta can never be overturned. But the Drabanans can be overturned. What do you mean sort of?
I mean,
it's happened.
Well, yeah, we have overturned.
Okay. It's true that we haven't done it in a long time, but the Drabanans can't be overturned. And why could it be a model like that? Because again, it's not locked in the way that hey, the right is locked in. Okay, Max.
Shouldn't this be the same thing with the Bakul? Like in the Gemara, Bakul comes down, Hashem's voice, and tells us what he wants, and yet we're so insistent on having the Rabbanan that we say, Lo Hashmaim, and the Rabbanan declare their own.
Okay, that's a great. Max, I have a question about for us right now. Yeah.
What's the example of Sharon that was overturned?
What's the example of the Rabbanan's overturned? Okay, so you guys know there are various gzeirot about products we get from non Jews, such as Cholav Akum. If you look at the Mishnah of Otazari, there's one gzeirot called Shemen Akum, not to get oil from non-Jews, but that Xer did not make it. Okay? And we don't keep that Xer. Okay? Or, there was a Xer. The question is like, problem is it's still confusing. When it didn't get off the ground because people were not makabel, you need a formal negation. That's the whole debate. I'll use it anyway. Okay, at one point there was a takana that you can't learn Torah if you're a balkari. Okay? Or make brachot, which would mean every time husband and wife are together, right, he can't go to shachs the next day, basically, until he goes to mikvah. Okay? Not surprisingly, Am Yisrael was not happy about that takana, and it did not win the day and also got canceled. So there are things that got canceled. You have to figure out in that case if you need a formal cancellation or not. But yeah. Yeah, but that's always by using like a loophole within the system. Is it like Prisbo?
Well, what about like
No, but there's a difference there, guys. So Yibam's a good example. There were two options in the Torah, and what do we say? Everybody should choose option B.
What about Shofar? If you follow the
Oh, that's a good question. Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. That is a great question, but I'm not going to deal with the next 30 seconds. But I will tell you, if you want to look at it, Rafi, look at the Minchas Chinuch HaLotasar. He discussed Lotasar only for Beitin HaGadol, or is it for any Beitin? Take a look at the Minchas Chinuch HaLotasar. Very interesting discussion there. All right, guys, last part, and we'll wrap the whole share. How does this solve the Suffolk problem? Good, I would even go further. In a Duraita, what am I trying to avoid? I can't have the result happen, because I know that the result is, if I avoid the derayta, the result is bad. It's bad in the fabric of the universe. So even if I have a suffix about it, I have to... Let's say I have a suffix of something's treif. But I know that eating treif food is against the divine will. So I have to avoid even a case of suffix. If I have a suffix in the derabanan, I'm not so worried about the result, because I don't know what the result is actually the correct thing. What value am I trying to maintain? Rabbinic authority. You know what? If I listen to them when it's vada, I'm still maintaining the rabbinic authority. But if it's suffix already, then it's not, as it were, directly flouting their authority, and that's why it's okay. That's why now, even for Rambam, you could explain why suffix derban lakula, suffix deraita lakama. Okay, brief summary here, guys. Let me do the summary first, Moshe. That's the question, okay? Brief summary. Okay, we have a famous debate between Rambam and Ramban. Okay, what's the debate? For Rambam, what does Lotosur include?
Everything.
Okay, excellent. What's the advantage of Rambam? Rabbinic authority is firmly anchored. Okay, what's Ramban's critique? So why are there so many lucky differences between Taraita and Rabbanan? Conversely, we have Ramban. Lotasar is limited to rabbinic interpretation. Yud Gimel Mido, not to enactments. He could easily explain the distinction between Taraita and Rabbanan. The issue for Ramban is, why do you have to listen to the Rabbanan on Ner Chanukah, etc.? Great. Let us do both solutions. We'll go to Ramban first. Comes along with Chanukah Wasserman. What's his explanation? It is we assume it's Ratzon Hashem, that the Rabbanan do a good job of extrapolating values from the Torah. That's why they make Ner Chanukah, to commemorate the story. And we're confident enough to feel obligated, but still, that does not make it a formal Doraita, and that's why there are distinctions. On the other side divide, for Rambam, we have two solutions. What was Ramban's own solution for Rambam? Ramban's own solution, he mentioned it briefly. Why are the distinctions between Doraita and Rabbanan according to Rambam? They're all, very good, Natan. There are 100 built-in clauses in the Rabbanans. You have to do this, but not if it's suffix. You have to do this, but it's okay if a katan testifies. You have to do this, but not if it's tzar balichai. They built in all those clauses. That's what? And they did it. Very good. I think it's interesting. This is what Joe said. They did it to differentiate between the right to and the rabbanan. And finally, we have Rameir Simcha. Oh, there is a right to command, but the right to command is not about the specific act. The right to command is about
keeping social order.
Now, let's go back to Chael's point from before, guys. What is the greatest proof for Rameir Simcha's theory? Let's go back to that Yushalmi. According to Yushalmi, what bracha do I make? Not al tilav, but because that's the value I'm realizing here. The value is not al tilav, it is mitzvah, it's okay. Guys, see in 1 30-second makshav idea? Last thing, okay? Just you guys had a lot of fun today. I want to see one last thing. There's a rule in halacha called ein gozrim gzeiril gzeira. Okay, you guys know about this? Chazal allowed to say don't do B because you might come to A. They're not supposed to say don't do C because... So it's a great machlokas why that's true. What do you guys think? Why should there be a rule called Ein goes from zero to zero? Ben?
Because if we struggle too hard to fix everything, then we'll create fences and fences and fence ourselves because we can't do it.
Okay, so the one possibility is what Ben just said. We're afraid of neurotic rabbinic bodies. Everything's going to become usher. We can't let everything become usher, so we have to make a rule, Ein goes from zero to zero. But there could be something else you could say. Moshe?
So I think we're being strict when it comes to
like a Torah law, like the B is being strict on A, which is a Torah law, but then C, B is still a rabbinic law, so you're not being strict on rabbinic law.
Okay, so I'm going to say it a little bit differently. Let's close this point, guys. You can come over after it if you have a suggestion. The Maharal in Bar HaGola says the problem with Zeru is because you make the Tufel into the Ikar. Right, that the Raitas are supposed to have fences. The Rabbanans, if you make fences for them, you're saying that they're the same as the Raitas. I think it's an important point to realize, guys. The Rabbanans really matter, and yet one should make a distinction between the Rabbanan and the Raita. All right, guys, have a great day.
Thank you.